There were bruises and cuts on their skin, and their eyes were sunken and smudged with darkness. The smaller woman was limping hard. Her leg looked like it had been broken and never healed properly. "Calix," I breathed, but he held up a hand and didn't look at me.
"What is the risk?"
he asked the Quesitor.
"Minimal, my king. We have done frequent studies about how weak they need to be to prevent being a threat, while still being strong enough to make their powers present in some small way. It is quite an exact balance."
Calix nodded sharply. The man was first. Barely older than Kairos, he let himself be led, and the Quesitor directed him to a spot in the room. The young man stopped there, and the Quesitor took up another bowl.
"Water, my king,"
he said, and poured it out in front of the man. To the young man, he said,
"Do it."
I held my breath as the young man raised his head, and slowly the water lifted, trembling a little, betraying the weakness of either the man or his ability. I gasped, looking to my husband. But instead of anger, there was a hungry greed on Calix's face.
"And now,"
the Quesitor said, reaching for the bottle. He unstoppered it, holding it out toward the young man expectantly. The water stayed aloft, and the young man looked at the Quesitor, unsure of himself. The Quesitor tilted his head and splashed some of the green liquid on the young man. He gasped, recoiling, and the water fell. Calix pushed forward in his seat.
"Raise the water again,"
he ordered the young man. The green liquid seemed to have only scared him. He was unharmed, but he shook his head.
"I can't,"
I heard him whisper.
"Can't or won't?"
Calix asked, standing from his chair.
"Motivate him, Quesitor."
The Elementa man hurriedly held up his hand, and it shook visibly, but nothing happened.
"You see,"
the Quesitor crowed. The young man looked at me, and I felt the threads push up at my hands and skin, choking my throat, demanding I do something. I shoved them away, trembling. I would not be exposed. Not here. Not now. Not ever. Not if this was the result. Not unless I knew that elixir worked, and I could get some for myself.
"Again!"
Calix shouted, clasping his hands behind his back. A girl was brought forward, the one with the bad leg, and her lip curled in fury as they pushed her.
"Don't touch me!"
she snarled. But her eyes were locked on my husband.
"Stay back, my king,"
the Quesitor said.
"She was part of the resistance."
"I am part of the resistance," she corrected. "And you just put me in a room with the king." She raised her hand, and Calix made a choked noise. "Calix?" I cried, jumping from my chair. I ran to his side as his face flushed darker and his hand clawed at his throat. The Quesitor threw the liquid on her, and nothing happened. She laughed.
"You will die by an Elementa hand," she snarled. "Isn't that your fa-"
Calix dropped, and so did she. The guard behind her withdrew his sword from her chest with a disgusting crack. I stared at her in shock. She had landed on her knees, and she held there for a moment as blood bloomed on her chest, and she looked at me. But then she fell, crumpling to the floor, and the spell was broken. Shaking hard, I reached for Calix, who was gasping and coughing. I touched his face, but he sat up and pushed me. I fell back onto my hands as he stood, wiping spittle from his face as he went to the guard who had killed her and yanked a knife out of his belt. The girl was dead, unmoving and quiet, and still Calix launched on her, stabbing her over and over and over again. "Calix!" I sobbed, covering my mouth and trying to push away as her blood caught on my skirt and her body was mangled beyond recognition. Calix threw down the blood-drenched blade and strode over to the Quesitor, grabbing the front of his black coat and dragging his face close.
Your elixir couldn't stop an insect! You think this is a game?
He snarled.
You think I am joking about this? Next time you come to me with imperfect results, I will take your head. Do you understand me? Yes, yes, my king,
the man cried.
Get this scum out of my sight!
He roared, shoving the Quesitor toward the Elemente. A loud sob escaped me, and I covered my mouth as my husband seemed to notice me.
Stop crying,
he roared.
Get up!
I struggled to my feet, and as soon as I did, he grabbed my arm, dragging me into the hall with blood-drenched fingers. He stormed through the hallways, flinging open a door and pounding down a dark stone staircase, echoing with chains and distant cries.
Who else is with the resistance?
He bellowed. I tugged against his wrist, too frightened to cry, too aware of the rocks around me that wanted to answer my fear with power. It felt like nausea, my body desperate to give in and desperate to resist in the same awful moment. The Quesitori down here skittered to open more doors, and Calix yanked my wrist, turning me to face him.
You think I'm cruel, wife? You think I'm cruel because I try to eliminate enemies who try to murder me? They work on your brother's command,
he roared at me. You're hurting me, I whimpered, trying to pull away. He let me go, and I stumbled back against the rock as he turned to face the Quesitori.
Execute them,
he snapped.
My king, it will destroy the validity of our information,
one protested.
Your information is already invalid,
he snarled.
Now, so my wife can see.
I screamed as they slit the throat of one middle-aged man, and I didn't wait to see another. I turned and fled back the way I'd come, my heart pounding. I kept running until I hit the open garden. A section of the garden was built around a large boulder, and the moment I fell against it, I felt stronger, and the revulsions brewing in my stomach eased. Then I hated myself, that I could breathe easily again after watching those people murdered before me. And the worst, the fear that shook every bone and every bit of me wasn't for them. I saw my face in their stead as I relived the murders I had just witnessed. My face streaked with blood, my body feeling the pierce and crunch of the blade that I was supposed to be able to control. If I couldn't get rid of this power, it would be my fate. And if I couldn't sway his heart, it would be the fate of hundreds of others. It was a long while before Calix emerged. I had struggled to my feet and thought better of it, sitting down again on a bench and looking at the closed gates. As little as I wanted to, I knew I had to wait for him. I had to compose myself and put my fear behind me. I had to convince him to see the madness of his actions. Then he appeared. He looked at me and moved past without touching me. A soldier brought his horse, and he waved it away, cutting a sharp look to me.
You like to walk, don't you?
He snapped. I nodded, silent, and he waited for me to step beside him before he started walking at a punishing pace. I kept up with him.
Thrice damned incompetent fools,
he said after a long while.
If their work weren't so important, I'd kill the lot of them.
So they will be punished, I said, put on trial for imprisoning people like that. That's what they're doing, isn't it? He stopped, wheeling on me.
Who? The Quesitori? They aren't imprisoning people. They're imprisoning traitors and sorcerers.
Who are people?
They are not people,
he growled.
You saw what they can do. They're dangerous, and this could lead us to controlling them.
He shook his head at me, disbelieving.
I thought you understood why this work is so important. I understand why you might want to find this elixir, I told him. I want to help you do that, but you are torturing people. He jerked away from me.
We aren't torturing them. We just use their blood and their abilities.
That isn't all you do, I cried. I was shaking, and I felt hysterical, dangerous, uncontrolled. You killed them, and you killed them all years ago. You, all this, it's because of you.
What did you say?
He snarled at me. You did it, I told him. You killed the islanders. I knew when you told me you were tricked, something wasn't right. You killed them. And it wasn't just in the past. You're still killing them.
Yes, he shouted at me. Is that what you want to hear?
I turned around, wildly looking for a way out of there. All I saw were white stone walls and a guard standing farther away than usual. How could I leave this place? He grasped my arms, and I shrieked at the unexpected contact.
You know nothing about that day, Shalia. I was the one who was betrayed, not her. I can't change what happened, but what I did, I acted out of emotion, and that has never happened again.
He had just stabbed a dead woman more than 20 times because of the depth of his hate. But he was too wild, his hands too tight, and I couldn't say the words.
I was secretly engaged to Amandina. We were going to marry and stop the war. But your brother was there, and she decided she'd rather have a desert man. So I put the elixir on every weapon we had. And for the first time, they couldn't stop our arrows. They couldn't control our swords. I broke the islands, and I made them all pay for her cruelty.
He was shaking me, his eyes boring into mine, and I couldn't catch my breath. Rian had something to do with this? Rian had been in the islands offering aid, but Calix pushed me away and shouted,
"Water!"
at one of the guards, who came trotting up with a skin. He handed it to Calix, who gave it to me.
"Drink,"
he growled,
"before you faint."
I did as he commanded, with trembling hands, and Calix stalked around me, restless and scowling. "The elixir," I breathed. "You used it before?" He nodded. "How did you get it?"
"The Trivetus who made the prophecy. He found it in Soroka, and offered it as a way to protect me."
"And you killed him for it?"
"I never intended to use it. I was bringing it to the islands, to Amandina, as a show of faith."
"Who was Amandina?" I asked. I knew I had heard the name before, but I didn't think he had said it. It felt like it was from a very distant memory.
"The daughter of the High Priestess,"
he grunted, and I felt the blood drain from my head. "Kata's sister." Calix had been engaged to Kata's sister, which was why he thought he'd seen Amandina the night of our wedding. But if she was Kata's sister, that meant...
"She was an Elementa,"
he said, nearly under his breath, just as I thought it.
"Fire."
I shook my head slowly as the pieces fell into place. His hatred for Elemente, it all came from a broken heart? "No," I said, shaking my head. "How could you possibly go from loving her to treating Elemente like that?" I asked. Red flushed high in his face, and his gaze on me burned.
"It is because of that. That is the reason for all of this. And don't you dare speak to me again of this, or I swear to the three-faced god I will make you regret it."
He snarled. We stared at each other for long moments, as his ugly threat settled between us, his breath ragged and unchecked.
his eyes wild.
Do you regret it? I asked him, my throat working.
You said you can't change what you did. Do you even want to? Because what I saw today, I think you would do it all over again if you could. My voice got quieter and quieter as I spoke, and I risked a glance at his furious face before looking away from him.
I refuse to regret it,
he growled at me, his voice low and hard.
And it wasn't enough. You saw what the sorceress did today, what she said to me. An elementa will cause my death, and the resistance is rounding them up like sheep. Both the resistance and all the sorcerers need to be cut down before they have the chance.
I nodded slowly, and I knew why I had waited so long to confront him about what I knew. I could never learn to live with what he'd done, or accept it.
Shalia,
he growled, and I saw his hand reaching for me. I ducked away from his touch. I couldn't even look at him. I felt ill.
Wife,
he snarled.
You will. My king,
I heard, and I looked down the wide road to see a figure on a horse and several soldiers behind him. Even from this distance, I knew it was Galen, and Calyx cursed as he stopped again. Galen was upon us in moments, swinging down from his horse easily.
My king,
he said, bowing his head.
Brother, Calyx grunted. Why would you leave the Tri-City without my protection?
Galen asked, his eyes rushing over Calyx, stained with blood, and the blood streaked on my arms and skirts.
Do not think to question me, Commander!
Calyx snapped, but his eyes cut to me, and I felt pinned by his gaze.
Do your men not inform you? I assumed that, as you have not previously seemed wildly incompetent, you would be close behind, and I had urgent business to attend to.
Galen looked to me, and I crossed my arms around myself, turning away from his gaze.
And your business?
Galen asked.
Concluded,
Calyx said sharply. Galen dropped his head to Calyx.
Yes, my king. Would you prefer to return to the Tri-City now or in the morning?
He asked.
The morning,
he said, taking the reins to the horse.
Escort my queen back to the Summer Palace, and we will have a meal.
No, I said, and everyone looked at me. I won't go back there.
It is my palace. Where else do you suggest we go?
Calyx sneered at me. Then his head moved, and he looked toward the tall tower looming up above the center of the city.
Fine. Galen, escort her to the Oculus.
Galen's eyes shifted toward the tower, like he barely dared to look at it.
You wish to take the queen to the Oculus?
He asked.
Without further delay, Commander. I will join you shortly.
Calyx mounted Galen's horse and wheeled it around, going back toward the Summer Palace. A soldier dismounted and offered Galen his horse, but he waved it off.
The queen prefers walking,
he said, and this sounded resigned.
Three of you follow the king. The rest fall back.
Galen nodded to someone, and I turned, seeing Theron 10 paces behind us. He nodded back to his commander. Galen waited for me to start moving, and he clasped his hands behind his back and fell into step with me. I kept my eyes pinned to the ground, watching my feet shuffle quickly over the gray stone. Galen led us down the wide avenue, and when we turned between 2 white stone walls, he asked,
"What happened?"
I shook my head, but suddenly tears welled up in my eyes. I kept my face down, and they fell from my eyes unchecked. I didn't dare look up to see if Galen noticed or not.
"Did he hurt you?"
he asked, his voice soft. I shook my head, though perhaps that was a lie.
"Did he hurt someone else?"
I halted, And suddenly the tears were sobs, and I couldn't hold them back.
Wait,
he murmured, pressing a hand to my back and urging me forward. He brought me to the spire, ordering guards away from us. He opened the door and urged me inside, and it was instantly dark and cool and secluded. I felt Galen's arms come around me, tight and comforting, pressing me into the shelter of his shoulders, his neck, his arms. He whispered,
"Go ahead. No one can see."
I don't know how long we stayed like that, wrapped in darkness and something forbidden.
I wasn't sure if he shouldn't be touching me or I shouldn't be crying.
Perhaps it was both. As the tears slowed, Galen's hand was following the path of my hair down my back, his head pressed against mine, and it was so gentle. It made my heart warm and full in a way that I hadn't felt in a long time. And while I could feel the threads, they weren't desperate and demanding like at the coronation.
"You're ruining your reputation as a tough soldier," I said.
He laughed, the sound a rumble against my chest, and I suddenly deeply regretted not being able to see his face. He smiled so rarely, seemed happy so rarely, that it seemed like a terrible thing to have missed what he looked like laughing.
"It's all an illusion,"
he told me. I sniffed, pulling back from him and wiping my face. My whole face felt swollen and sore, and I shook my head.
"I'm so sorry. I didn't mean for you to have to do that."
"I didn't have to,"
he said. His hand lingered on my arm for a moment, and I could sense his eyes on me, but I didn't look up. His hand fell away from me, and he opened the door again with a sharp flood of light.
"Theron,"
he said, and turned back to me.
"Are you ready to go up?"
he asked. I nodded. An endless staircase curved along the wall of the tower. In the center, a wide basket rested on the ground with ropes that disappeared upward. Galen flipped open a door on the side of the basket, holding it for me. Without being given an order, Theron started trotting up the stairs.
"My queen,"
Galen said, and I stepped into the basket. Galen got in before shutting the door. It was very close. Our legs were pressed together, and the only way my whole body wasn't mashed against my husband's brother was by leaning backward, gripping the edge of the basket. I gasped as the basket lifted, twisting hard once it was in the air. I was unsure if I could reach for him now that I wasn't crying, if his arms around me had been a desperate act, or something that would become part of our friendship. The motion was swift but uneven, and I wondered what poor soul was hauling us up on the other end of the rope. We moved up through the middle of the tower, quickly passing Theron as we rose. The basket stopped, and Galen unlatched the door, motioning that I should go first. We were in the top, the broad square perched on the narrow tower. The room we entered was filled with sunlight, and I could see the distant mountains through the windows. Awed, I went closer to them, opening a wooden door that led onto a balcony.
"Shalia, you shouldn't go,"
Galen warned. My breath caught, but it was not for the natural beauty of this place. The enclosures. There were hundreds of them, filling the valley between the oculus and the mountains with endless gray squares. More, maybe. Some were larger, with long buildings in the center. They seemed an endless block of stone, with no grass, no space, no air. In many of the enclosures, as if prompted by a clock striking a certain hour, long lines of people were being led from one building to another. They were all moving slowly, unevenly, like the shipbuilders. They had no fight, because they had nothing. No choices, no chances, no hope. Just stone and guards, and one building and then the next.
"Slaves," I said, turning to Galen as he came out to the balcony.
"I didn't want you to see this,"
he said,
his voice soft. You... they're all slaves.
Calyx won't call them that,
he said, his back straight and body tense.
They are laborers. Very skilled laborers, for the most part.
So they can leave? You pay them? I demanded.
According to my brother, they serve the three-faced god. What higher purpose is there?
He passed the hand over the view, his voice bitter.
We feed them, we clothe them, and house them. We go to great expense to see they are taken care of. He believes that is a fair wage.
How can he do this? I asked. How can he do any of these things?
Calyx believes stratification is a natural part of civilized society. There must be soil so the tree can take root. There must be a working class to drive industry.
Slave labor is not the same thing, I cried. And those bodies hanging in the harbor. And these Kaisatori, I asked. And the islands. How long will this list become before you believe he's a monster, Galen? I looked at him, and he was tense and still beside me.
Do you?
He asked. Yes, I said, resting my head in my palms.
Maybe he is,
he said softly.
You spoke to him about the islands?
Yes, I said. He admitted it. I thought I could accept it. I shook my head. I thought, maybe in time. But I can't. I won't. Not after today.
What happened today?
He asked again. I realized that he hasn't changed. It would be one thing if he regretted it. He doesn't. He says he refuses to regret. Galen nodded.
He's a king. If he were to admit a mistake, his enemies would use it against him. He was such a young king. He didn't have the luxury of being wrong.
That doesn't make him right, I told him.
No,
he agreed.
It doesn't. But it does make it complicated. If he had been overthrown, we would have been killed. All of us. People nearly succeeded several times, but Calyx, he held strong. He learned to be inflexible.
And where did he learn to hate? I demanded, glaring at him. Because you don't hate the way he does. Danae doesn't. How can you defend him?
He's my brother,
Galen said, bristling.
Sometimes he's been a bad king in order to protect his siblings. And sometimes he's been a great king and sacrificed our needs for the many. I don't envy him any of the choices he has to make.
Galen's jaw worked.
How can you even ask me such a question? You would never condemn your brother, and I would never ask you to.
I thought of Rian taking lives when I hadn't thought he was capable of it. That, at least, I did understand. But I couldn't will myself to bring Rian into this argument, so I stayed silent.
He does what he believes is right,
he continued, issuing a heavy sigh.
I saw what Calyx did with you in the mills, and the Kaisatori. They developed an irrigation system to get water to crops in droughts,
he said.
That arguably changed the nation. And they developed an incendiary powder from a yellow mineral found in the mountains, and sugar, of all things. And that's been able to save hundreds of men from breaking their backs in the mines.
Incendiary powder? I asked. I don't even know what that means.
It can catch fire,
he said.
But instead of burning like oil, it bursts, particularly when it's contained rather than out in the open.
And that saves lives? I asked.
Mining is hard work. If we can save a single hour of manual labor, it's a great gift.
His shoulders lifted.
But I also see the danger in that substance. Calyx wants to fit it onto ships to allow us to disable our enemies without engaging them on the water.
But that prison, I said, shuddering. I cannot reconcile what they're doing there.
What prison?
He asked, his sharp face creasing with displeasure. You didn't know? I asked, shaking my head. The Summer Palace is home to Elemente who are being used for his inquest. I thought of the bruises and all the blood, and I couldn't form any more words. His gaze shot out over the enclosures, fixing on the palace in the hills, like he could see right through the walls.
I will look into that.
I shook my head. How is that different from this? I asked, sweeping my hand out. They are slaves for a different service. His eyes met mine.
It is,
he said. I wasn't sure what his promise to look into that would yield. But it did ease my mind a little. Thank you, I said softly.
What will you do?
He asked. Do? I repeated bitterly. What do you do?
I make his reign secure,
he told me.
I make it so that he doesn't have to make such terrible choices anymore.
And you lessen the impact when he does, I said. Like with those men guarding the gold. A muscle flared in his jaw, but he nodded, looking away from me. I sighed. Maybe I can't fix him or change him, but I can change the world that our children inherit. My children won't learn to hate. They will learn to rule with grace and wisdom, and they will change this country when they do.
That's a beautiful vision,
he said, his voice rough and soft.
I will defend them with my life.
He swallowed, the action moving his throat.
You must be hungry,
he said.
I'll call for some food to be sent up.
With a sigh, I nodded. He turned away from me. Curious, I followed the pathway to the edge, chasing the pink splash of light that heralded the sunset. Finding that the balcony actually turned the corner, I rounded it. There was another door to another room, and this part faced the water, the glorious sun just starting to make the sky glow above the horizon. The water looked peaceful and distant, but the view was marred by the deep scars in the earth for the shipbuilding dry docks. From the oculus, I could see there were gates that barely restrained the ocean tide. I could only imagine the fury of the ocean as those gates were lifted. It made me think of Kata and her gifts, and inescapably about my own. I heard a shrieking call and turned to see Osmost, flapping his wings to slow down and land on the railing beside me. What are you doing here? I murmured, smiling at the bird. He sidled closer to me, and I petted his head slowly. We were used to each other, but Osmost had always made it very clear that he was still a wild animal, and I had the scars to prove that. Watch the skies, Kairos had told me. I shook my head with a smile. He had sent his hawk to watch after me when he couldn't. And this oculus closely resembled a human bird's nest, so Osmost was fairly delighted. I dug my fingers into his feathers, scratched the base of his wings, and he raised them a little, making a fond clicking noise at me. I could see the town that Galen mentioned, the only place around the wide harbor with structures that weren't made of stone. Sweet little buildings that looked like they had been there forever. Off one of the docks, it looked like people, maybe even children, were running down, jumping high and splashing into the water. I sighed, leaning on the railing. It was nice to know there was a little happiness in this bleak city. Osmost's head cocked, and his wings fluffed once before he leaped back from the balcony, diving low and out of sight. Galen rounded the corner a moment later, not coming close to me.
You should eat,
he said.
My men brought some food for you.
What about Calyx?
I asked, turning to him. He never has a good sense of time when he's with the Quesatori, he said. He may be a while. But I've had the men clear the barracks. You can sleep here.
This made me feel foolish for having demanded a different location than the Summer Palace, though I know he didn't mean it that way. I'm sorry to displace your men, I said.
You are their queen, he said, his face nearly hinting at a smile. They'd jump off the balcony for you, so this is a small request.
Still, I said, and walked toward him, going into the room where a tray of food sat on a table covered with maps. Theron stopped when we entered the room, a chicken leg sticking out of his mouth. He hurriedly pulled the bone out and dropped it onto a plate as Galen snorted.
Has the queen stopped feeding you?
Galen asked.
I smiled at him as I sat, and he looked to Galen. No, Theron said. But the king was quite fixed in his attention, and I don't believe the queen has eaten all day, which also, incidentally, means I haven't eaten all day. Then we shall have to remedy that,
Galen said, also pulling a chair over as Theron sat back in his own, going to work again on the poor chicken. I took a piece of chicken, though I attempted to eat it slightly more delicately than Theron. There were also bread and fruits and cheeses, and Galen poured us wine.
Are we leaving tonight?
Theron asked Galen.
No, I believe the king wants to go in the morning,
Galen replied.
I've sent word to Zeth and the rest of the Sapir. They should be here by then to properly escort the queen.
Theron nodded. I leaned back, looking to Theron with a smile. Speaking of Zeth, I said, why don't you have one of those giant sword things? Theron huffed.
It is not a giant sword. It is a hopesh. And frankly, I'm hurt, my queen. I thought you, in your infinite wisdom, would have seen the limitations of such an unwieldy weapon. Knives, however, are suitable for any occasion.
He gestured to his knife-lined breastplate, where at least 20 thin, deadly stilettos gleamed back at me. I laughed. I think the point of such a weapon is that it frightens enough people that it's rarely used, I returned. And I like it because it resembles a scimitar.
Ah,
Galen cut in.
But the curve is for an entirely different purpose. Did you notice the notch behind the curve?
I shook my head, and he gestured with his fingers, showing a little hook right before the long blade curved outward.
Here,
he said.
It's meant to snare people and swords, so he can slice through them with it.
No, Theron interjected, pointing a finger at Galen.
It ends up just trapping people, so he has to use something else. And the big oaf isn't fast enough for that.
I laughed. I'm sure you could learn to use it, too.
It's too heavy for him,
Galen said with a smile.
Theron tossed down his piece of bread. 3 hells! It's an inferior weapon. When will people understand that?
I ate a piece of cheese, laughing happily to glimpse the boys inside the tough warrior men. Before long it was dark, and Calyx still hadn't returned. Galen left us to go check in on him, and I felt tired enough that I went to the empty barracks room in the tower. There was another door out to the balcony there, and I curled up under 2 blankets, staring at the moon, which looked like she was waiting just outside for me. Sailing in the dark sky. There was blood in my dreams. That was the only thing I was aware of as I woke with a scream, the world bursting and shattering around me.
Get down!
Theron yelled, pulling me off the bed and throwing a blanket over my body on the stone floor. A moment later, he was beside me, his arm covering my head.
Glass and rough debris pressed against my body, and my panicked breath was unnaturally loud in the space created by Theron's arm. "What's happening?" I cried. There was a horrible noise above us, and a jerking, tearing motion rocked the floor. I screamed, curling tighter against the rubble.
"There's a thrice-damned ship flying through the air," Theron yelled.
Something gave way, and another shower of stone, wood, and glass hit us. Something struck my leg, and I cried out. But the sound was swallowed by a low, keening groan as the bunk started to tip over. Theron was so much faster than I was. By the time I saw the beds moving, he had already grabbed me, shoving me out into the middle of the room. Jagged fragments scratched at my skin, but Theron crawled out right before all the beds tipped and collapsed. "Where is Calyx?" I wailed.
"Not back," he said.
He looked at the door, totally blocked by beds, and then raised his eyes. I saw where the noises were coming from. A ship's anchor tore its way through the roof, wrenching the whole tower with it. Theron hauled me to my feet, pushing me forward.
"We need to get outside," he roared.
The glass and rubble cut into my feet as we ran for the balcony. We halted when a series of loud, booming cracks sounded out.
"Down!"
Theron yelled, pushing me to the ground inside the balcony doorway. I huddled against the wood, and he braced us both in the frame. The tower lurched and rocked as one final shuddering boom rang, and I looked up to see nothing but sky. Several long heartbeats later, I heard screams and a loud crash as the roof must have fallen to the ground. Soldiers ran out to the balcony, lighting arrows on fire and shooting them. I followed one to see what Theron had meant. There, barely visible, was a ship sailing in the dark sky. There were still beads of water dripping from the hull, and the black sails were indistinguishable from the night around us. It was moving fast, coming back toward the tower. One of the flaming arrows struck the sail, and I could see with alarming clarity as the big anchor came back around, swinging on a long rope to strike underneath the lip of the wide square that formed the top of the oculus. The top of the tower rocked hard to the side, and Theron grabbed me, slamming us against the wall as the square lifted up fast. A soldier beside us lost his footing, and he cried out. As the floor rose, he seemed to move in slow motion, his arms wheeling backward. "Here!" I yelled, holding my hand out from the protection of Theron's body. The soldier met my eyes, but my hand was nowhere near close enough. And then gravity took him, and he rushed down the balcony floor. I saw him hit the rail and flip off the edge into the night, and I couldn't breathe. The tower gave a rumbling protest as the stone beneath us tipped more. A loud groaning noise vibrated through our feet as the floor jerked and slid, and I could see the rope attached to the flying ship drawn taut. Theron untied the belt from his waist and wrapped the thick piece of leather around us both, tying it tight.
"The top of the tower is about to fall," he told me, meeting my eyes. "We have to get off the tower."
"What?" I screamed, whipping my head around. The stairs were blocked. The whole floor was tilted up. If we moved off this wall, there was nowhere to go but open air.
"I need you to follow my orders without questioning them, my queen," he told me. "Can you do that?"
The floor shuddered and wrenched, and I nodded frantically.
"Grab the breastplate as tight as you can. Do not let go of me,"
he roared. I wrapped my fists around his breastplate, careful to avoid the pointy ends of the knives. He turned and leaped onto the balcony rail, wind whipping hard around us and almost knocking him off. The white stone enclosures below us were faint and small and dim in the darkness, and I shook my head wildly. "No!" I cried. "No, no!" But he jumped off the edge. I couldn't close my eyes. I couldn't breathe as fear swamped through my lungs, much less scream or thrash or fight. Everything solid fell away, and we were still rising, rising a tiny bit. And then the feeling changed. We were falling. Air rushed around me, and we turned too fast for my eyes to follow. Theron somehow managed to catch the rope, and the sharp stop flung us around so hard my fist slipped free from him. I flapped backward, but the leather around my waist jerked and held, digging in deep to my skin. Theron's face swam above me, and behind that, the dark, looming ship that we now seemed to be attached to. Theron grunted, but gave no other protest, and I grabbed onto him again, my hands shaking, clinging hard. The city looked like a toy below us. My breath was too stuck in my lungs to even manage a scream. Our weight on the rope dragged the anchor free from the oculus, but it didn't swing back in a natural motion. It hovered in the air for a moment, and then started rising upward. I looked to the boat above us, and the fire on the sail went out, dousing the illumination. As the anchor drew close to the ship, Theron swung a little and caught the edge of the deck with his hands, letting the rope free as he ordered.
"Grab the railing, quick!"
I obeyed, wedged between him and the wood.
"Untie yourself from my waist," he said.
"No!"
"Quickly, or we'll both fall," he said.
Trembling, I broke the knot with clumsy fingers. I could feel his arms shaking with the effort to hold us.
"Go over the rail," he said.
I nodded, scrabbling for purchase with my feet, catching on his knee. He groaned, but I pushed up a little to jump over the rail of the massive, impossibly floating ship. A second later, he was up and beside me, his feet hitting the deck, and his arms out as he shoved me behind him.
"Don't! She's the queen!"
he cried. I gasped. There was a tall boy there, pointing a crossbow at Theron's chest.
"You're not," he said,
and I saw his finger curl over the trigger. Osmost shrieked, flying in talons first to hit the crossbow away as the bolt flew harmlessly over the edge.
"Damn bird,"
the boy yelled, readying another arrow. "Bass," another voice cut in. The boy lowered the bow as a girl climbed the steps to the front deck. I could see other people behind them, but they all looked young, barely older than I was, if even that. This girl wore dark clothing with rings and strange designs in chalky white. Salt, I realized. That's what had been all over the shipbuilders. Her dark hair was coiled like a head of snakes, and it was lighter on top from the sun. But nothing shocked me nearly as much as Osmost swooping in, his wings outstretched, to rest on her shoulder.
"Hello again," she said to him,
and he clicked at her.
You know my brother?"
I asked, coming out from behind Theron. She raised an eyebrow.
"Your brother is a hawk?" she asked.
"No, the hawk is Osmost."
"Osmost," she said, looking at him again.
He ducked a little, and she scratched his chin.
"I only know the bird, but I'm guessing you're the Tri-Queen."
She turned to glare at the boy.
"And we don't kill queens on this ship."
"Who are you?" I asked.
"Asposia,"
someone shouted. I looked behind her to see a young girl holding her hands out at her sides and shaking. Asposia took off down the stairs before the young girl even got the chance to say, "I'm losing it!" Asposia nodded, standing in front of the girl and holding her palms up in the same position.
"I'm with you."
"You're tired,"
the girl cried, sniffling back tears. I can't hold this much longer, and neither can you.
Your elementi, I breathed, climbing down the stairs, like their power pulled me closer.
Aspasia snapped a glare in my direction. How else do you suggest we fly a ship in the air?
A different boy was behind the young girl.
Take deep breaths, he said, putting his hands on her shoulders. It's not much longer. Just hold on.
He looked up at Aspasia.
The bass boy came down to the deck as well.
We have to get out to open water, and we can't take them with us. We can't just leave Dara there, the other boy protested. You know what they'll do to her.
Aspasia's arms were trembling, and the concentration and frustration showed on her face.
It's her or all of us,
Bass said.
Vote,
Aspasia said. Quickly!
Save Dara,
Bass called. Of the 10 or so children on the deck, only Aspasia and 3 others raised their hands.
I'm sorry, Aspasia said to the boy. We have to leave now.
We're not leaving her,
growled the other boy.
You can't do this. We'd go back for any of you.
Sweat beaded on Aspasia's face.
Come on, she urged the girl. Let's go.
The girl whined, and a tear shot down her cheek, but she nodded. The boat wheeled, pitching violently to the side, before it sailed out toward the harbor, faster than I imagined it could.
My queen,
Theron murmured to me.
When I say, jump.
I nodded without further explanation, especially since I was very sure that I didn't want to know what that entailed. As soon as we cleared the land, Theron surged forward, pushing the 2 girls so they stumbled. The boat dropped like a stone, and Theron yelled, jump, at me as he pushed off 1 boy, then another child. I didn't look back. I just ran for the edge, and I jumped. The water was as black as the night, shining and moving like a demon below me. I braced for the fall into it, but for long seconds it didn't come. I felt the threads. Even though there was no earth around me, there was nothing for them to hold on to. I felt them surrounding me. Just before I hit the water, I knew why. The elementa on the boat had broken my fall. It wasn't my power I felt. It was hers. So different, but made from the same forces. I wondered if, with that touch, she knew what I was, too. I hit the water, and the cold slammed against my body, covering me and taking me in, stealing my thoughts and my breath, as I fell deeper into the arms of whatever spirits governed the sea. The power I'd felt, her power, was gone, severed the moment I hit the water. If Theron was near, I couldn't see him. My brothers, my family were flung far from me, and neither my husband nor his valiant brother were here to save me. I was alone, and the water was crushing me. My lungs burned, and I kicked my legs, trying to figure out how to find the surface, when everything was dark around me like I was blind. I hadn't been practicing using my element, not like I should have. I had used this power helplessly to save Kairos and Rian, but I had never believed I would need it to save myself. I had been so frightened of my own power that I had forfeited my best means of survival. Clawing at the ocean around me, I fought. I refused to believe it was too late. I was desert-born. I was elementa. I was powerful beyond my own understanding, and I would not be defeated by this. This wasn't like the lake in the desert. This water burned with salt, and it was so deep and vast and dark that I seemed to be weightless, and I twisted, unsure if I was up or down or where the air was. I fought the urge to breathe in water,
and called my power to my hands.
I could feel rocks, bright threads far below me.
That meant the air was up, and I pushed as hard as I could. I broke the surface with a wild, gasping breath as Theron struck the water, swamping me with a wave that brought me under again. I kicked and fought, panicked, breaking the surface again. I couldn't keep my body aloft, though, and I started sinking.
"Hold on,"
Theron gasped, hooking his arm under mine. He drew me back against his chest, lying flat in the water and using one arm to swim as his legs kicked, keeping us afloat. A light shone on us, and a moment later a boat appeared. Galen abandoned his oars, other men steadying the boat, while Galen pulled me up and out of the water, leaving me in the bottom to cough and gulp for breath. Theron was next, pushing up over the side as Galen grabbed his clothing and heaved him the rest of the way. Soldiers covered us in blankets and their cloaks, and as I shivered, I knelt by Theron. "Are you all right?" I asked.
"My queen,"
he gasped, still catching his breath.
"That is the question I need to ask you."
Relieved, I wrapped my arms around him, feeling shuddering sobs that were some mixture of the cold, my tears, and my utter gratitude rack my chest.
"You saved my life," I told him.
"And he will be very generously rewarded for that,"
Galen said, hauling back on his oars. There were two other men rowing in the boat, and Theron and I were wedged between their seats.
"Are either of you hurt?"
Galen asked, looking down at us as he pulled back again.
"The queen was injured when the tower was attacked,"
Theron said, still panting for breath. "Just scratches, I think," I said, shaking my head at Galen. His eyes met mine, his scowl softening a little, in a way that made him look worried. He was worried about me. He swallowed and looked away.
"Acacitor is waiting to see to your needs. I'm sure you have all kinds of cuts and bruises,"
he said, his eyes flickering back over me.
"I'm well,"
I said, huddling under the blankets and shivering for warmth.
"And you?"
Galen asked Theron.
"It will take more than falling from the sky to hurt me,"
he said. Galen snorted.
"The Quesitor will check you also, my friend."
Theron's hand flopped up from the boat and then fell again.
"Bah,"
he said.
"If something needs stitching, I'll let you know."
Galen gave a sharp nod, drawing in a deep breath like he hadn't for a while.
"Was this the resistance?"
Theron asked. Galen shook his head.
"No, we don't believe so. They were stealing workers. It's possible they're foreign slavers with powers. We've heard reports of people disappearing from the communes, but we never knew how they were doing it. Now we do." "Damn sorcerers,"
Theron muttered. My eyes flew wide to him, but I didn't say anything.
"Did you see who they were?"
Galen asked.
"No,"
I said, before Theron opened his mouth. Even if I trusted Galen with such information, I refused to arm my husband with information to help him track a ship full of children. Theron looked at me.
"No,"
he repeated.
"We never made it on deck."
Galen nodded, and we all stayed silent while they rowed us back to shore.
There were soldiers waiting for us at the dock,
but Calix wasn't among them. And I looked to Galen.
"Where's Calix? Was he hurt?"
His face went grim as the oarsmen grabbed the dock, looping ropes around little metal bars. He stood, helping me to stand as well.
"He's occupied,"
he told me.
"But safe. We need to make sure you're all right."
Galen helped me from the boat, and Theron behind me.
"Theron, go rest,"
Kaelin ordered. He shook his head.
I won't leave the queen unattended. I'll stay with her. Zeph will be here with more guards soon anyway.
Theron nodded